Blog Talk Radio.
It's the Michael Gay Show. I'm your host, Michael Gay, broadcasting live from the ATL, Atlanta, Georgia. The time is now 6.05 p.m. on the East Coast, 3.05 p.m. on the West Coast. Today's date is 4/17/2021. Sorry I got in here a little bit late. Blog Talk has a habit of making you work hard to go live. It kept saying, "Oh, your host pin is, you only put in five numbers." I'm like, "No, I put in all of them." And so I had to battle with that. But thank you guys for joining us on a beautiful Saturday here in the ATL. And I see already there's my co-host and a few callers that are here to join into this conversation that we're going to have. Oh, wow. I can say it's been a crazy week. But actually, if we really think about it, 2021 is starting off to be a very crazy year. 2020 was crazy enough, but 2021 is starting off to be a very crazy year. And I'm thankful to have our special guests. One is a co-host here, Officer Crenshaw, and thank goodness I got Officer Stan Mason, who has a show, and with what's going on with these recent events, it's only right to have these two gentlemen come on and share their thoughts and opinions about what's happening. I want to go into a couple of other things before we really get deep into it. What's happening now with these new laws that is being introduced to Georgia, which we spoke on that momentarily, or the other week. But look at other states who are trying to adopt the same thing. Let's talk about that too. This is not good. And what's bad is that some people are ignorant to the fact of the effect it will have, not just on the black community, but just in the communities that don't have the transportation, don't have means to get to certain things. Now, they say, well, you should show your ID. Well, I show my ID when I go to vote. They just want to make sure that, hey, that's your address? Okay, cool. You're at the right polling place. That's it, right? So let's talk a little bit about that. But our main topic is going to be about the recent trials or the trial, the George Floyd trial. Come Monday is where it's going to really be interesting. And it's going to be life-changing for probably a lot of people, not just for the Floyd family. Even Officer Chauvin, the one who put his knee on George Floyd's neck, which killed him. And wow, the way they tried, the way the defense tried to come up with an excuse or whatever you want to call it of the death of George Floyd was just so, oh my God. People across the pond are saying, really? That's your best defense? He inhaled the damn fumes from the car. You stand at a bus stop and the bus goes by every day and it's putting out carbon monoxide. Every day we breathe that in. And that's the cause of his death. Just happens to be on this day. What is your defense? Dante Wright jumps back into his car. A veteran of 26 years, police officer, says, taser, taser, taser. Nope, not a taser. It's gun, gun, gun. Shoots him. And as he drives off, he crashes, I believe, into another vehicle. And, of course, he dies. What the hell is going on? And there's even more, as we know. What's going on? So let me open up these mics. I see hands are waving. And let me open up the mics to my co-host. First, Janet Davis, are you there? How you doing?
Yes, I am. But, Mike, I wanted to let you know I'm on my way back home. So if I die because my phone needs to be on a charger, I will be calling back in. I just want to let you know that.
Okay,
front,
if your phone die, okay? Don't say if you die. If your phone die, okay.
If my phone dies.
That's the cheap, right. Okay, yeah. Please say it the right
way. I didn't know
right.
I said if I die.
Yeah, that's what you said. All right. Okay, so let me open up other mics here. I believe this is Bernie B-Man Jones. What's up, B-Man?
Hey, what's going on? Hey, Janet, get on the face. I'm just chilling.
Hey, Bernie.
Hey, been working hard this week, had some stuff going on, and yep. But just glad to relax and talk about a couple of things. That's what you're talking about. Yep. You know, stuff going on in my old hometown, Chicago, of course. And yeah. Same old script.
Wow, it's a sad situation. Yeah. Let me keep opening up microphones here. We also have who is a guest on this topic. And also, Officer Mason, I see you on the board. Go ahead and hit the number one so I can open your mic. But we have Officer Crenshaw. Security in the house. What's up, my brother? How you doing, man?
Hey,
hey,
Mike. Hey, Janet. Janet, you better not die, because then who going to love me?
Yeah, I don't know why I said that, but please forgive me. I meant my phone.
We know.
Right. I also see 818-516 open up your mic. But also, since I have Officer Crenshaw here, Officer Stan Mason has joined us. What's up, my brother? How you doing? Happy Saturday to you.
Hey, what's going on?
Hello, hello. How's everybody doing?
Great. Glad to have you.
Good.
Yeah, glad to be here. It's good to be good. God is good. You know, I'm not plugged up to a wall on the ventilator and Trump's not in the White House. Let's go.
Amen. Amen. Amen.
Right. Just a reminder, 818-516, I see you on the board. If you want to speak or if you have anything you want to say, go ahead and hit the number one to open up your mic. All right, so where do we start? Oh, my God, there's just so much going on. 818, hold on. Okay, let me open up all the mics first. Your mic is open. That looks like timing.
Hey, Mike, how you doing now?
What's up, Tyler? How you doing, my brother?
I'm good. How are you, Simon?
What's going on?
How are you, Bernie? Everybody?
Hey,
Officer
Simon.
Hey, Janet. Wow. Now, Janet. Yeah, you talking about dying and everything, Janet. We didn't need to hear that. I said, what are you talking about? If I die, I'm like, oh my God! Wait a minute! You have to be on the phone. And talking about dying. How did dying get involved in there? I said, she
on her way home, but no, wait a minute. On her way home, but if I die, it's like, wait a minute. And guess what? Her phone just died. Her phone, her. Okay. So she said she was on her way home. All right, gentlemen, ladies and gentlemen, and for all of you guys that are listening on the World Wide Web, you're more than welcome to call into the show at 516-531-9861. That's 516-531-9861. The chat room is open, so if you don't want to talk, that's fine. You can text, and I will read your message on air. So where do we begin? So much is going on. Let's go with the Chauvin trial. The defense. What defense do they have? And like I said, Officer Crenshaw and Officer Mason are our special guests to share their thoughts and opinions as far as what's going on. I want to go into that trial first, and then we'll go into the recent shootings and events that have happened within the last week. But in all honesty, what do you guys think the outcome is going to be? Crenshaw, you go ahead. What do you think the outcome is going to be when it comes to this whole thing? Because Chauvin decided not to speak, which is very good on his behalf, because they have the worst defense. Go ahead, sir.
Well, he would have been smart to speak and explain his side of it. It wouldn't have mattered. It wouldn't have mattered, just like half their defense was the exhaust from the tailpipe. Well, like you spoke earlier, we breathe in exhaust daily. The only difference is we're not forced to breathe it in. He was forced because he held his head down there at the exhaust. That's no more different than putting a bag over someone's head to where they can't breathe.
But now let me ask you a question real quick. I want to intervene for a second. But there was no evidence that the vehicle was still running. There was nothing. I never saw anything that showed me that there was exhaust coming from the vehicle, and there was no testimony that the car was still running. And look at these new cars. A lot of them don't, you know, I mean, there's a lot of electric cars, right? There's a lot that run off of gas and some run off electricity. The cars automatically change. So was there any testimony whatsoever or any proof that the vehicle was running? I never heard that.
There's no testimony. There's no proof. But procedure is you're supposed to have two keys. So when you exit your patrol car is still running. So if you have to enter it in a hurry, it's still running. Mm-hmm. The only problem is we've had vehicles where that vehicle was still running. So you're right. There's no evidence that it was still running or that it was off. Based on the fact that they brought him out and was putting him in the car, it very well possible it could have been off. It might have been on because they might have had to go in, unlock the doors, crank it up, and open the doors to put him in. But it's very much possible that it was off. There's no evidence. If it was on and running, you wouldn't see the exhaust unless it was a real hot or a cold day.
Right. Right. That's another question. If you don't mind, I want to shoot that same scenario to Officer Mason. What's your thoughts about what the defense was trying to say as far as the exhaust? Did you see any evidence that that was a possibility, or do you think it's just bull?
Well, I think it's just bull, and I'll tell you why. In reference to, we're talking about Minneapolis, so we're not talking about San Antonio, Texas. So we're not talking about 80, 90-degree weather. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
As long as that tailpipe was in that video, with all the experts and everyone who's analyzed this video far beyond any of our critique, you would have seen moisture dripping from that tailpipe if that vehicle was on.
True. Mm-hmm.
Somebody would have noticed that. Now, as far as what may happen in the trial, I spent 25 years as a police officer in Waco, Texas, all 25 on night shift, all 25 in patrol. But I've been black for 59 years. I understand the system by virtue of having worked in it, but I understand the world by virtue of having been black. Now, we saw indisputable proof in Rodney King, and we saw what happened. We saw it in Tamir Rice, and we saw what happened. You know, we saw it in Arthur Sterling, and we saw what happened. So I am not ever comfortable with these kind of cases because I understand as anybody black, whether they're a legal scholar or whether they're not, we tend to look at what we know to be true and what we see to be true and what we hear to be true, and we watch these things massaged and manipulated in court. And like I've said many times, court has never in this country and will never be about what you did. It's about how you can pay someone to say what you did or did not do. Some folks have mute money. That means they're poor. Some folks have whisper money. That's most of us. We can get a little piece of attorney, and then some people have shouted from the mountaintop money. Now, Derek Chauvin's defense is being paid for by who? The police union. So here's the same people that are saying we want reform, yeah, we want to change, we want to make our changes, but yeah, you're putting up union money to defend Chauvin in this deal? Come on, man. What did James Baldwin say? I can't believe what you say because I see what you do.
Interesting point. That's very true. And you know, and that's how come I said when the defense tried to come up with that excuse, they came up with all kinds of stuff. What I found interesting is that the coroner who actually did the autopsy on George Floyd said that it was what is the term, asphyxia. He was choked to death.
Asphyxiation. Mm-hmm.
Asphyxiation. Okay. Asphyxiation.
You know,
they're almost out of that.
Mike.
No, go ahead.
Something else never happened in the history to where your brothers in blue speak out against you in a manner of the way that they did. The chief of police and everybody. So
that's right.
Based on that, you know, he's going to get convicted, and I don't even know how they're going to keep that union. Like Mason said, how they're going to keep that union, and that union is paying for a defense that the department is saying he was completely wrong.
That is
awesome. I'm sorry. Also, Mason, you want to respond to that? And then I want to go ahead and get to Bernie and also Tom and their thoughts. But real quick, Officer Mason, what's your response to that? Do you feel like he's going to be convicted?
I'll wait and see. America's got to show me. You know, we, Officer Crenshaw and I, we go in and we testify. We don't win cases. You testify to that little bit which you know to be true. And so many people come before you, many people come after you, and you're appealing to a jury, of which, unfortunately, most of us spend more time trying to get out of jury duty than being in jury duty so we can riot and protest and complain about a white jury. So let's just be all the way clear about it. You know, sometimes you have these white juries and you get these hung juries, and you get the holdout juror, because I've been in jury pool. And I've seen when the judge says, does anybody have a reason why they can't be in this trial? And some of us have hardships. We need to work. That's understandable. But I watch a litany, a line of folks lined up with all kinds of excuses of why they can't be on the jury for whatever case. There may be 10 cases, and you don't know which one you're going to get sent to. So we can't if we don't want to partake in that system and be a part of that system, yes, it's going to be inconvenient. So don't pick up a protest sign and complain about a white jury. You know, we have to be involved in the solution. That means you got to have skin in the game. Yes, it's got to be uncomfortable. But truth does never come easy.
Bernie, what do you think, based on what we just talked about, as far as that whole, this whole trial, the defense, what they try to say? They tried to say drugs were involved. They tried to say the exhaust pipe was involved. They tried to say everything but the knee on this man's neck. Everything they tried to throw at the jury to make it reasonable, okay? And that for some reason on this particular day, his drug use, his the possibility of inhaling, you know, carbon monoxide from a tailpipe is what killed him, but not the knee. What's your thoughts on that?
You know, basically, the defense has no defense. The defense is throwing, what do you call it?
Shit against the wall and see what will stick? Is that what you're trying to say?
Yeah.
Shit against the wall to see what will stick?
Basically,
I'll say
yeah.
It for you.
They're throwing doubt into the juror's mind that, you know, it wasn't his knee that killed him. But the video, everything, and these officers that are on the phone, Officer Crenshaw and Officer Mason now, you know, just like, you know, they both have their theory. And everybody knows it's a matter of what we see. I know he said it's not about, you know, what you heard more so than what you see. But these people are listening. So whatever the defense can throw up in the air, and anyone who wants to grab that may get a hold of it, but really the defense has no defense. A picture, they say a picture is 1,000 words. Well, that picture is 1,000,000 words. So you know what I'm saying? So there's really no defense. That's mine. That's just my opinion. But they're going to throw some stuff up there to try to, you know, create doubt, you know, but, yeah.
Okay, so my last question, do you think he's going to be found guilty?
Absolutely.
Okay. There should be no doubt. Go ahead, also, Crenshaw.
I know time and time is right. Well,
and time is right.
But it's it's almost like when I went through POW training. You know, they hold a rag over your mouth and pour water down your throat to try to make you believe that you're drowning or going to drown. You know, so if someone's forcing you to hold your head tailpipe, if it's on, you're going to ingest that if you don't have the ability to move. So either way, if it's exhaust, he was forced to inhale it.
Right. Good point. He couldn't move, right. He couldn't get away from it, right. I want to get Simon's input. Go ahead, sir.
Well, on one hand, I mean, you know, the world saw what was going on. And, I mean, they had, they brought in everybody to show you how this man died. From the coroner, pulmonologist, you brought all the people in. You even had the emergency, the EMT, even while, and because they didn't remember, they didn't do any type of CPR on him. The cops didn't. Matter of fact, when the EMT showed up, they still had their, he still had his foot, I mean, his knee on the man's neck.
Right.
He was already dead. And he was still there. And you also saw, as the doctor pointed out, how his he had lifted his foot off the ground. You notice in the video, his foot came up, so he was applying pressure.
Mm-hmm.
And just like his chief told him, he was already subdued. Now, they keep telling me, Chip, that all my friends, that, you know, there's two sides to every story. I said, how many times do you got to flip it to show me that what that man did? How many times? That you saw a man, they said, well, he's, you know, we saw it with not Michael Brown. What's the big dude that they choked out in New York? Selling the
Garden.
Oh, yeah.
Barry Gordon. Deuce, I came
Garden, yeah. With the cigarettes, yeah.
And you know, now you, the pulmonarist guy told him. He said that a person with a, who was in good health would have died from this. Didn't even matter that he had drugs in the system. And then the MMA guy spoke up and said, man, we do that move in training. You know, so I don't know what they're looking for. Do I think that he's going to get off? You know, Mike, I really hope that he don't, but man, let me tell you, Beverly Hills has already boarded up their buildings just in case. Because remember,
you know what?
All he needs is one person.
Right.
They just need one. Not three, not four. One.
Exactly.
Out of the jury.
One
exactly.
Person. That one person.
To say that that guy is innocent. They believe that he's innocent, and it's all over.
Now, that's a good point. I'm glad that you said that because I didn't want to jump to that right away, but that is a good point because remember the Rodney King trial. I lived in San Bernardino, California, which is east of Los Angeles, about a good hour drive or so. And Simon, you know where I'm talking about.
Right.
When the verdict came down there. And I used to live and work in L.A., and I remember when I went back to L.A., because the riots didn't just happen in L.A., people were rioting in other parts of the country. Now, you're talking about Beverly Hills. They're already preparing for unrest.
Mm-hmm.
They already have the National Guard prepared for unrest in Minnesota, and you know that will be the hot point, right? Rodney King was not killed. But it was an injustice. And fortunately, we've
right.
had his daughter, Laura King, on the show a couple of times. I've interviewed her. In fact, I did invite her to come on, but she's busy this weekend with the Rodney King Foundation. I invited her to stop by. But he didn't get killed. But what we saw, and think about it, you guys. We saw a VHS camera from a distance showing seven cops beating the shit out of a black man back then, right?
Right.
And look at where we are now. we have a bunch of people standing on a sidewalk with cell phones videotaping an officer with his knee on a person's neck. And like you said, he puts his foot up off the ground, which is, they said, his weight and the equipment add up to about 91 pounds. Someone posted on social media, well, if Chauvin wants to prove his innocence, lay down on the courtroom floor and let somebody put their neck on their knee on his neck with no
that would be
and
good.
See how long he will last. And see how
and
long that
they
will last.
Get to take it off. That's all.
And the
I
thing is that where
you got a handcuff.
The thing is that I'm not trying to say kill somebody to make a point, but I
no,
get what you're saying. But you know, it's almost like, you know, in a wrestling match, you tap the mat to say like, I give up. That would be
right.
Interesting, right? True enough, that would be interesting. See how long it would last. But back to my guest, Officer Mason, Officer Crenshaw. Do you feel like, and I don't know if I already hit you guys with this, but do you feel like he's going to be found guilty? And with the charges that he has, will all charges stick or will just some? Do you think this jury will go with some? Or, as it just been said, it just takes one person. Minnesota, it takes just one person. Because we know of another case that had happened a while back where an individual was killed, and it was only one juror who had to disagree, and that person was acquitted. Officer Mason first.
You know, for me, as I said earlier in my earlier comments, do I think Chauvin's guilty? Without a shadow of a doubt.
Mm-hmm.
But that's about 25 years of police experience. My 59 years of being black says it only takes one. An American justice system has not proven itself to be just, in my opinion, in these type of cases. I think that there is pressure that is asserted. I'm not condoning violence. I'm not condoning damaging property. But
right.
It's a shame that when these type of incidents happen to black and brown people, they don't get media attention, nor do they get the attention they deserve until somebody's salon went up in flames. Somebody's store got looted. You know, Dr. King said that the riot is the voice of the unheard.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very important for people to understand, while they call us reactionary people, we have put up with this for 400 years in this country in some shape, form, or fashion. We have been patient. We are the most forgiving people on the face of the earth. But I think it's time, and you know, my personal slogan is forgiveness without reform is insanity. Don't keep asking me to forgive and move on while you remind me that 9/11, we'll never forget the Holocaust, always remember, slavery, get over it. Then these things happen, and you just tell me, well, you know, that's justice. We're going to move on. No. There comes a time when enough is enough.
Yeah, you know, that's interesting where you put that all together about 9/11, never forget the Holocaust, and then slavery, get over it. That's exactly what they want us to do. Officer Crenshaw, same question to you. Do you feel like that he's going to be found not guilty, and of all the charges, or do you think they're going to get leniency, or what? And if he's found not guilty, do you feel like all hell will break loose in this country?
I believe he's going to be found guilty of all charges, because no matter how they try to twist it or flip it, it's a lot of pressure, not just on those jurors, but on those politicians as well. So unless they can get someone to walk into that jury room or into that courthouse and say something to one of those jurors to get it to become a mistrial, I think that he's going to be found guilty on everything, for the simple fact Trump try to empower. Just the opposite of what Mason was saying. You know, he tried to give a lot of the white people back their entitlement, and those were the ones that had mountaintop money, like Mason said, or was it Timon? Those were the ones that had all that money and running those businesses, and they're afraid right now. They're afraid. So there's going to be some political influence on that decision as well. That's one of the reasons why the chief of police stood up the way that he did, because he doesn't have the manpower. No department has the manpower to keep back those protests, especially when they start getting outrageous. And the National Guard is that. Some of those National Guardsmen are business owners. They can't even watch their own businesses.
Yeah.
And Mike, if I could interject real quick, you know, one of the reasons we're even having this discussion and the reason why police reform has not moved on in this country is because major media and a whole hell of a lot of talk shows, including a lot of black ones, use this term right-wing extremism. If you say that on my show, I'm going to hang up on you. I don't want to hear it. Okay, if you're having a heart attack, you don't go to the dentist. So if you want to get better, let's call it what this is. This is white supremacy. It is not white right-wing extremism. That's the pseudonym. We're not addressing the issue. That's why we keep having this circular discussion.
Mm-hmm.
We keep having this because nobody put their career or their name out there and call this out as white supremacy. And that's what it is. That's not a Pan-African view. It's a factual view with 400 years worth of events to back it up.
All right, now. I like that one.
Okay, so Janet Davis is back. Janet, welcome back. I see you back on the board here. I don't know if you caught it, but my question about the Charlton trial, do you believe he's going to be found guilty or not? And if not, do you believe all hell will break loose?
I feel he's going to be found guilty. But when someone mentioned about Trump giving them, trying to give people their privilege back, they never lost their privilege. We're the ones, the minorities are the ones that's trying to get privilege because they're treating us like second-class citizens. And that is, we got to get away from that. But I actually believe he's going to be found guilty. Even the police force was saying he was not within their normal way of doing things. And so, he didn't get up there. He used his, Fifth Amendment or whatever, so he didn't get up there and testify.
Right.
But because he didn't want to be cross-examined, he sat up there through the whole trial taking some phony notes. That's not going to help. The defense was
well, that's a good thing that you mentioned that. I'm sorry to intervene, but I'm glad that you mentioned that he chose not to speak on his behalf. Right, and we saw him sitting there writing whatever. I mean, you know, they didn't zoom in on it. But what do you think would have happened had the prosecution had a chance to cross-examine him? Just hypothetically.
They would have ate his ass.
They'd have lit his ass up.
He would have had no booty to sit down on at all. Period.
Right.
they
knew
lit
he
his
was
ass
gonna incriminate himself. He couldn't have gone through asking him questions and things because he would have shown that he was guilty. He knew he didn't do what he was supposed to do. The EMS people had to pull him off of Floyd. He didn't offer any kind of help or anything to the man. And no matter how many times he pled, for help. So you know, he's guilty.
I have to say, this is one of the best prosecution teams I've ever seen. I've seen defense teams that have gotten folks off, but on this side of the, you know, I mean, for it to be a prosecution team, and I'm sure you guys would agree, the way they went back to back and the way they brought in the witnesses and everything and examined the evidence, this was one of the best prosecution teams I've ever seen. Wouldn't you agree?
That's right.
They were pretty good. Mm-hmm.
And see, Mike, that's why I say he screwed himself, because he didn't get on the stand. Because even though they would have ate him alive, he might have been able to create just a little bit of doubt in one of those jurors.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
But what could he have said? What could he have testified to? What could he have said that might have put doubt? I mean, just since you mentioned it, what could he have said?
It wouldn't have been anything that he said. It would have been his actions, his manner.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
His facial expression, his body language. They would have
he could have said he was distracted. Because he sure couldn't say he was had fear of his life. But he could have said the crowd distracted him, you know. But you're supposed to be aware of all your surroundings and control of every moment.
And that's the biggest thing. One thing they teach you, and I don't know if this is all departments, but in Atlanta, when you start getting a crowd around you, and I'm going to use this term, but don't take it the wrong way. They tell you to relocate, not to relocate to continue to do bodily harm, but to relocate so the situation doesn't get out of hand, which
That's
means
right.
you pick him up, put him in the patrol mm-hmm. car, and you take him to the precinct or to the ER room. That way, if the
That's
crowd
right.
is escalating, you've removed yourself, and you've removed
yeah.
the prisoner for your safety and the prisoner's
mm-hmm.
safety.
Mm-hmm.
Officer Mason, I want to go to Officer Mason. Is that true of where you worked in Waco, the same way?
Yes. And I agree with what Officer Crenshaw just said. It's something police officers know this to be true and attorneys know this to be true. And it's a point that's not being discussed. He's exactly right. I think that he hurt himself by not testifying because he right now they're getting decimated. Had he testified, we live in a very Blue Lives Matter culture. No doubts about it.
Mm-hmm.
That's just the way it is. And he's got to
appeal the police
to
attitude,
one person.
Right.
Not
mm-hmm.
to win them over. He doesn't have to convince them that he is innocent. He can appeal to their moral or spiritual side to, well, I just can't send this man to jail because me personally, I'm just not sure. My uncle's a cop. Any of that could have came into play. Officer Crenshaw
mm-hmm.
is exactly right. And that's why I believe that was his last gasp to appeal to someone. And we live in a very Blue Lives Matter culture. Policing continues to be a secret society.
Right.
By and large,
right.
all car is not bigger than the mafia. As
mm-hmm.
far as it goes on in House Station House.
Mm-hmm.
All he had to do was convince, as you just said, all he had to do was convince one juror. Had he went up there and even started crying on the stand and pleading that, I'm sorry, I didn't know, whatever, you know, had he done any of that, that probably, as you just said, that probably would have, because it just takes one juror to say no, right?
That's for sure.
Interesting. All right, so I really wanted to stay on this, but let's move forward to the next topic, you guys. We did 45 minutes on that. Wow. Dante Wright. Now, there's been different stories about this in that state. You can't have hanging scent trees to make your car smell. Rearview mirror.
Allegedly, that's what he was stopped for. And then, allegedly, they said that they found out he had some warrants, some traffic warrants. Now, this is a traffic stop, right? The officer, which you guys know who she is, 26-year veteran, probably about the same amount of time or more than you two gentlemen, shoots and kills him. She says, taser, 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 three times, which that's the norm for officers to say to inform the other officers that you're bringing out a taser. But she brings out her gun. Now, as you guys know, and whoever has the noise in the background, please put yourself on mute for the quality of the show and open up your mic when you're ready to speak. As you officers know, if you're right-handed, your firearm is on your right-hand side. That's your dominant side. You're left-handed, your taser is on the left dominant side. A gun weight is a little bit more than a taser, right? The grip on them are a bit different. So the weight and the feel of them are far from similar. And if you watch the video now, she says, taser, 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 and she has it in her hand. She's standing back a little bit, and she moves forward to the vehicle, and she fires. Now, between that time, and of course, we're going to talk about the 13-year-old who was shot because they're talking about just seconds away, but she had many of seconds to notice the difference. Correct me if I'm wrong. So she's being charged. She's being charged for what, manslaughter? Not murder.
Second,
yes.
Second degree.
Excuse me?
Second degree.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Second degree. And that's negligence, in my opinion. That's negligence. 26 years. I want to go to Officer Crenshaw and Officer Mason because you guys are the experienced ones. You have held these guns. You have held these tasers. You have used them. What are your thoughts about this? Officer Mason, I want to go to you first, though.
Yes, I'm not even, you know, the taser versus the gun, the weight, the color, what body, that's all been debated on TV. We all know that to be true. Basically, if you were ever a kid and played with a plastic gun, you played with about the weight of a taser. So we all know that part. Mm-hmm. Let's go beyond that. See, I like getting down to, let's just get down to what's right and wrong. Number one, when you get tasers into your department, Taser International sends a blueprint of a course curriculum to teach on the specifics of the taser along with their recommendations, which develop your general orders, which you ultimately adopt or amend to fit your specific city or municipality. Number one on that list, do not employ the taser to anybody in a motor vehicle that is running or that is on an elevated surface. In other words, don't go to a suicidal person and don't say, don't jump off the roof, we'll tase you down. When you deploy that taser in somebody or somebody in a car, if they put it in drive and go down the street and kill somebody, you're liable. That was number one. We could debate the weight and the colors and all that. Although that's good factual stuff, but it's semantical. In fact, let's look at the first degree of protocol. She should never have had her taser out dealing with somebody who's in a vehicle that is running. That is right there. That's a violation, I guarantee you, of department policy. And in 26 years, you should have known that car is running. I can't use my taser on this. They're driving off. What do? You're not superhuman. You're not going to tackle the car. You disengage. You use bike strips. You do a pursuit. You do whatever it is you have to do. The guy didn't rob a bank. He didn't just commit a rape. That was the very first thing in this, and I see a lot of the media is jumping on the colors and where you put them, and I understand all that. We got that part of it. But let's just get down to that which you can't disprove because it's right there in their regulations because it comes from Taser International, who makes tasers and sends a course curriculum as a blueprint for you to develop your local departmental procedures. You don't tase anybody in a running vehicle. You don't, because if you incapacitate them, let's say their foot comes off the brake. Let's say they fall and put it in dry. Now the city is definitely liable for any damages to come after that. And that's the first thing that everybody should be focusing on. That first violation of policy is a 26-year veteran. You knew going in, this vehicle's running, I can't use my taser. So you should be thinking, what tools can I use? You had backup officers there. You had enough officers there to put hands on him. He starts driving off to a pursuit. Use spike strips. You can use other tools. But cops don't know how to slow down, evaluate the situation. And this is the biggest problem with police today. They do not know how to disengage because it now becomes personal. I've got to win. As long as the team wins, and that's the citizens and the police at the end of it, not just you. And that's what caused all of this, because that one policy violation, a running vehicle, and you applied the taser against the course curriculum that's recommended by Taser International. That's what started this whole thing going downhill to where we even got into the shooting.
Absolutely.
Wow. 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 Oh,
now, Mike, I agree with Mason on everything he said. But I'm old school, just like Mason. And we believe in hands-on. You got two officers
right.
Trying to pull him out of the car. Why are you pulling out a taser or what you think is a taser but turns out to be your gun? Why not run around to the passenger side of the vehicle, open the door, or bust
Hello?
The glass if you want to,
yes, sir.
And try to pull him from the other side? Because now
Thank
when he
you.
Hears that noise behind him, he's looking the other way. So the two officers that are trying to pull him out can gain better control over him and pull him out. Or just go ahead, instead of slapping each other's hands while you're reaching in there trying to be gentle and pull him out, if you want him out that bad, just snatch his ass out.
And if I can interject real quick, Mike, you know, it's funny that they would have such an ordinance for their city regarding anything hanging from the rearview mirror. Well, also, Kershaw will tell you that we have more stuff hanging from our mirrors and our windshields in our car than anybody's personal vehicle.
Yep. Yeah, you are distracted, right? Yep,
but
you got the computer there, you got everything. You got a lot of distractions.
Right,
yep.
So if it's not safe for you as a citizen, it certainly isn't safe for me as an officer.
That's why
wow.
I couldn't believe
now,
it.
Now, let me share this, Officer Crenshaw, and I want you guys to listen to it. It's a disturbing video that he shared with me. His son had it, and he sent it to me because I'm going to flip the script a little bit. We're still going to be on track here, but Officer Crenshaw shared with me a video. I don't know where it happened, at what state it was, but it was the shooting and the murder of a police officer. If you look at the video, and I can send it to you guys if you want to watch it, but it's where an officer pulls over a guy in a truck, and Officer Crenshaw, according to what I listened to, and I watched it over and over again and tried to listen to the audio, it's kind of hard to hear because the wind is going, but the officer notices that, well, actually, he doesn't notice the guy has a gun. He says, wait a minute, do you have a firearm on you? And the driver says, yes. Now, the officer is on the passenger side window talking to this individual. While he's talking to him, the individual opens up the driver's side door. He said, do you mind if I remove it off of you? This is what the officer says. He said, okay. So keep in mind, the officer's on the passenger side. The driver has already opened up the door. The driver gets out. Now, it looks like he pulls this weapon out the bed of the truck, but as I keep watching it, it looked like it was really like behind the back seat or something, but it might have been in the bed. I have to look at it again. But this guy pulls out an AK-47, and as the officer is walking from the passenger side to the back of the truck, The driver gets out, pulls out this weapon, and open fires and unloads on this officer. Unloads on him. It's available. The video is available. And it's sad to watch. Now, Officer Crenshaw, you shared that video with me, and I looked at it, and you shared the mistake that that officer made by him being by himself. Can you elaborate on that?
Right.
What was the mistake that he made at that point in time? I understand that officers are you know, kind of jittery at times and this and the other, but I think he just had too much trust in this person, in a sense. But can you elaborate on what you saw on that video, though you guys haven't seen it, but I just gave you the outline of it, what happened. And this officer was killed dead, and this guy opened fire with an AK-47. It's sad to hear this officer screaming for his life. And then after he unloaded about, what, maybe 6 or 7 rounds, Crenshaw, he turned and,
right.
and then put a bullet in the back of the man's head.
Right.
Can you elaborate on the mistakes that officer made that you felt like he made?
Well, armchair quarterbacking, because in Atlanta, for the longest, we rode by ourselves. State troopers ride by themselves a lot. State troopers will walk up on the passenger side of the vehicle. But when they walk up to the door and initiate communication, they will back up. We would always go to the driver's side to where we, if we have to, we got a little better control. Because if the person tries to get out of the vehicle, we can either snatch them on out or we can slam the door shut to where we can get back to cover and safety. The first thing is you always look in the bed of the truck to see what's in the bed. If somebody's laying back there, a blanket, if it's a body, you don't know. It gives you an idea of what you're encountering on a traffic stop, because all traffic stops really are unknown. You know what you're stopping them for, but you don't know anything about that individual. Now, this is me armchair quarterbacking. I'm something I really don't want to do. But I would have rather walked up on the driver's side, especially when they're expecting you to walk up on the passenger side. You try to break a routine. You don't want to become routine in anything that you do, because you never know who's watching you, who's observing you. If every officer stops and always walks up on the passenger side, well, now when I see you going towards the passenger side, I'm going to jump out and run or jump out and start shooting at you. But if I'm walking up to the driver's side and I come out real rapidly, that officer's got a chance to encounter me. It's kind of hard to sit from the driver's side and shoot back over your shoulder and hit. You might be able to stick the gun out the window and just shoot. But I don't want to armchair quarterback him, because he lost his life in that situation. I just noticed a few things that I would have personally done different.
And Mike,
Officer,
if I could just say,
Mason.
Yeah, I'm
Officer Mason, yeah.
I'm sorry. We talked about it today. And one of the things, at least in Texas where I was, it was up to us how to approach. And I worked nights. And I think most people listening to this know that 9 times out of 10, officers are going to approach that driver's side. When they're pulled over, they're adjusting their rearview mirror. They're looking in that side mirror because they expect you to be there, because 9 out of 10 officers, that's exactly where they go. And so a lot of times the driver's side approach for troopers use it, they mostly work highways and busy roads. One of the things, reasons why they do it, and I did it on major highways, Interstate 35 in Texas or Highway 84, Highway 6, is because if that guy starts shooting, I got two choices. I can run out into the street into 80-mile-an-hour traffic and hope I don't get hit by constant traffic. I got nowhere to retreat. On that passenger side, you have at least that car between you and him. and a field or a street or houses or whatever that you can, something you can get behind other than moving traffic. So sometimes it does have its advantages to do. I would use it at night mostly because I knew people were expecting me. Everybody in that car is looking up that left side of that car for me to come up. And you could walk up and actually look, and you could be standing there before they even know you're there. It does have its tactical advantages. But what I saw in that video that screamed out to me more than anything was that officer was comfortable. A, because because it's daytime, I'm safe. Never mind that most bank robberies happen in the day. You know, I'm safe. It's daytime. He never pulls his gun out. His hand doesn't even go on his gun. I'm safe. This is a good guy. He's okay. He's not going to hurt me. And we see that oftentimes, you guys are seeing these shootings now. We've been looking at these videos for over 20 years in roll calls, and y'all didn't know about it, and learning from them, from the mistakes that officers made. And it's not to criticize them, but we have been. And we look at these things, and we find the one variable is when the officer felt comfortable. I'm not saying you got to have the gun out, you got to be nervous. But when they get to where they trust a demographic of people, whether it's old people, whether it's white people, whether it's black people, whatever it is, when they feel in that comfort zone and that guard is down, that's when things happen.
Good point. That's very true because that's, you know what, and I'm glad that you said that. And by the way, I want to say, let's see, esoterism is in the chat room. It's not even that complex. Esoterism, if you don't mind, go ahead and elaborate on what you just posted. And, of course, you know the number to the show. You should. And by the way, if anyone wants to call, please dial 516-531-9861. That's 516-531-9861. If you're on the board right now, if you called in, you have a question or comment, go ahead and hit the number one, and I'll open up your mic. But, Officer Mason, that's the one thing I got from that video. Of course, you've seen it, is that that officer was just too comfortable. And I didn't think about what you just said, is that, oh, it's daytime, you know, it's just a normal traffic stop. He was too comfortable, not aware. I can't say aware, but not understanding or didn't see any signs of anything wrong.
He says in the video several times, you know, okay, he sees the gun. He acknowledges that it's there. And he tells me, get out of the car, can you, I just feel more comfortable if you're away from your gun, can you hand it to me? He says it in there. When's the last time you heard an officer ask a black person, hand me your gun so I know it's okay?
Yeah, well, he said, do you mind if I disarm you, is what he says. He says, do you mind if I disarm you? He said, well, wait a minute,
He recognized the gun is there. But our kids are getting shot with cell phones and nothing in their hands. And I'm not criticizing the officer. I'm criticizing the institution and the policies, procedures, training, and how it's applied.
So does it go to, you know, there's a lot of argument about white privilege, and I'm not going to call this white privilege, but just the thought process of where, oh, well, I'm white, he's white. I'm black, he's black. You know, we ain't going to have no issue. You know, we all the same. You follow what I'm saying? That officers sometimes feel more relaxed when they're around their own race, whether they're black or white, right? That they feel more relaxed because of race. That, well, you know, I'm black or I'm white. Do you think that that's the situation, that, or that might have been the situation?
I'll interject this and then I'll be quiet. But I said this today on my show. Every chief of police brings out training. Every time something happens, we need more training. If I have 100 officers from the same department, 20 are black, 20 are white, and we'll say 20 are females of varying races, the other 40 are white males. They all come from the same department. They all go to the same training. They all go back to the same department. Most of them work on the same shifts. But yet we consistently in this country have a demographic of white officers shooting, whether it's white people or black people, being involved in these shootings. So the question then is not a matter of the training. The question becomes an application of the training and the mental stability of the people we're hiring to send to the training. Training is no good without equal and fair application. And that is where we're not getting the discussion. We're you know, the discussion tends to revolve around racism, and to a degree, mental health comes into play. But when black officers are not shooting anybody at the rate white officers are, female officers are not shooting anybody with the exception of Betty Jo Shelby and this recent event, you're not seeing female officers who are smaller in stature. You're seeing a lot of white male officers who are getting involved in these shootings. Why?
All right. That's a good point. Yeah.
And
that's a good
point. To piggyback off of what Mason said, I brought this up before. The only time you go through a psychological evaluation is when you get hired or when you've gone through a traumatic situation, such as a shooting or a death in custody. If they would do it semi-annually to figure out where your head is based on your home life or your upbringing or your orientation where you might be working, to find out if you have issues against the neighborhoods that you're working in because you've been there too long, it might alleviate some of that. If they would do it every 6 months, you know, they could do it on your anniversary and on your birthday. Yes,
brother, you're in APD. I was at Waco. Now I'm going to ask you a question. And be honest, and we're going to clear something up that a lot of people in America don't know about. Officers know it to be true. Now, before you even got out of roll call and got on the street to try to put up with 10 or 12 hours worth of problems, how many officers that you knew of sitting in those roll calls that the sergeant was screwing their wife or the commander was screwing this person's wife and everybody in the room got pistols and you sitting in the middle of it?
Right, exactly.
Bro, that headache is.
I have to intervene for a minute because I got a person that's waving their hand. I want them to give them a chance to chime in, and also my co-host Janet Davis, of course. Bernie and Timon for standing by. I want them to be able to chime in into the conversation. But 419-984, wave their hand. Let me go ahead and let them get in. Okay. 419-984.
How you doing?
What's up?
Hello? How you doing? I'm listening.
All right, you hit the number one. Did you have a question?
Well, the question is that when you was talking about the guy that killed the sheriff, I saw that blog, and then I was wondering from hearing the officer speaking about that, and he was saying protecting himself with the car. Now, you have a cousin, Larry Moreland, who was said the same thing because we talked about it. Mike, this is Chris.
Yeah, Chris Moreland. Okay, cuz. Right. This is my cousin.
Yeah.
Okay.
So,
what's up, cuz?
All right. And I was saying when I was listening to the sheriff, what's his name? Mr. Croswell? I'm sorry if I got your name wrong.
Crenshaw.
My uncle is Crenshaw. I'm sorry. Mr. Crenshaw, when you were saying all these things that you would do, my uncle was saying the same thing. You know, protect yourself with a car, but you don't, as you were saying to me, is that
white officers would meet up with white individuals, they put trust in that. And him putting trust there caused him his death. But you don't do that when you walk up on black folks. You got your hand on your gun and you're ready to shoot real quick. But when they walk on white folks, you know, it's like white privilege. They don't see that.
Exactly.
Interesting.
Okay. Appreciate the comment, cuz. I want to put you on mute for a moment because it sounds like you're on the road, right?
Yeah, I'm I was listening to you all the way to the yard. I made it home, coming from Florida.
All right. I appreciate you. I appreciate you for a moment. And let me go to my other co-host. Thank you to my cousin driving across the country. Janet, what's your thoughts about what we were just speaking of? As I said, and as we just shared the story about what happened to this officer, where he had too much trust and was too relaxed. I know you haven't seen the video, or I'm assuming that you haven't. But what do you think? Is that true to you, that happens also? Janet Davis, are you there? Okay, I don't have Janet there. Let me go to Bernie Jones. Bernie, what's your thoughts?
I didn't see the video, but I assume that they were both the same way.
I'm here.
Janet is back, but I assume that they both were the same race. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. And that's whoever said that. That's the thing. He became comfortable trusting that this person was going to do what they said they were going to do. You know, and instead of him enforcing the law, he gave the person he was stopping the ability to make a decision where he should have been in control of that situation all the time. You know, stay in the car. You know, I'm coming around. Don't move. Don't, you know, let me, you know, where's the weapon? You know, he gave them too much authority on that stop, and it ended up being deadly for him, it seemed to me. Yeah.
Okay, so let me go to Janet. Janet, you want to respond to that?
Well, not a response.
You think the same thing?
I had a question. When you're using, when a police officer is using a stun gun or a taser, I don't know if those two are the same things. Are you supposed to point to a person's chest, or are you supposed to use other extremities of the body?
That's
because
a good question.
I'm asking the question because the officer shot right in the chest. And so I was just wondering.
Large extremity.
So we're going from the right. So you're saying as far as right, when it comes to Deontay Wright, the officer aimed at the chest. Okay, so right. That's a good question. Are you supposed to go towards the upper torso or somewhere else, or is it really just, as she's saying, are you supposed to go towards the upper part of the body?
This is Crenshaw. It depends on whether you're going to actually deploy the prongs or the stun, because you're not supposed to deploy the prongs in areas of the body that it could actually maim or kill. But the stun, you could actually stun in the neck from the way we were taught, in the leg. But if you're deploying the prongs, if you're actually shooting the prongs, they want you to go for large extremities of the body. You can't shoot them in the genitals or anything like that. You can't stun them there. You have to go for like portions of the body to where it's going to affect the nerve.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay, you said there's a difference between the prongs and the stun. Explain to us, what's the difference between discharging prongs and doing a stun?
Well, the prongs actually are wire activated. They'll actually shoot from the gun the same way a bullet would. And it holds a voltage in that line. The prong is the one that you actually touch the skin or the flesh to. And the electricity is going between the two prongs of the tip of the gun.
Okay.
And
I get it.
Because the prongs
are it's like a they look like a small fish hook that's straightened out. They're not as long as a hook, but they're designed to go in and hold in. You stay away from anything above the shoulders, and like Officer Crenshaw said, the genital area, because you don't want to shoot those prongs and hit somebody in the eye.
Right.
You know,
right.
So it's like you said, it's almost like a bullet. You know, and the difference between a taser and a stun gun, stun guns, when they came out and everybody ran and got them, they relied solely on pain compliance. They didn't impact the neuromuscular system at all. It was just a matter of pain and discomfort. Some people have a higher pain threshold than others. So the The taser operates on the central nervous system and causes involuntary convulsions, which is not something that you can actually control. So it makes it more effective in that standpoint.
Okay. Yeah, now I see the difference, right. Glad that you guys explained it. I appreciate that. I see a number on the board. I recognize the number. Thank you for listening in, caller, 215-805. You have a question or comment, you know what to do. Hit the number one. Okay, so this case with this officer, and like I said, it's just mind-boggling. She was training an officer. She was training a person and took a person's life. 26 years on the force, and she forgot what gun was what. To both you guys, both of you officers, Officer Mason, Officer Crenshaw, I'm sure many a times you had to use, well, I don't know how many times, but you had to use a taser, or you had to use your gun. Have you ever accidentally went to reach for one? And not saying that you used it, but have you ever just reached for one and be like, oh, no, that's the wrong one, you know, and reach back? Has that ever happened to you in your careers? And both of you have served, what, 20 years. Has that ever happened to you? Or you got confused with what to draw?
Mike,
I'm
Mike Mason. I worked at night 5 years, and then I went to the day shift for 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
I never deployed my taser. For the simple fact, I didn't train with it enough. So my thing was, you get 1 hour, maybe 2 hours of training annually on drawing your taser, which is cross-drawing across your body.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't feel comfortable using the taser. I was
so your weapon. Your gun and your taser at that time were on the same side.
No, they were opposite sides. When I say cross-drawing, that means drawing across my body, trying to pull that taser out.
Right-handed. Right.
I was more comfortable putting my hands on you and gaining control over you than I was trying to utilize those tools on the back belt.
Well, I follow you.
Because if I pull those tools out and we start fighting and I have to drop that taser or that Aspaton or that pepper spray, who's to say you won't get the best of me, dust my ass off, and then pick it up and use it against me?
Right.
So I kept my holster, and I went hands-on with you to gain control over you so I won't get hurt, and I don't have to hurt you or you can't hurt me.
Also,
the problem today is these officers today buy too much on the back gadgets because the department puts it in their head, we'll stand behind you if you use all the back gadgets. If you don't, we're going to go against you, but then when you use the back gadget, they throw you to the wolves anyway.
Right, yeah.
Let me get time in and go ahead. You got a question or comment. Go ahead, sir.
No, well, I've been working in probation for over 30 years, and I've never pepper sprayed one kid. And I'm with murderers, rapists, gangbangers, and, you know, pedophiles. It still comes down to structure. You have to know how to control the room. You also, I would believe that in that situation, there was a way to de-escalate, you know, how, you know, like certain staff at my job, they thought that kid's a bad kid. No, you don't know how to talk to him. You don't know how to structure him, you know, because y'all, you know, so it's, I still believe it's all in how you approach. That was a 20-year-old kid. If you're that scared to where you, you know, all this that you're talking about, then you don't need to be a cop. Because if the first thing out of your mind is to pull a pistol on a young kid, I mean, you know, because at my job, like y'all say, officers, I ain't got no, all I got is my body and pepper spray. And these, you know, we got kids 16, 17 years old. We got to take them down if they put hands on you, like you said. But before we even get to that part, isn't there a way to de-escalate this situation and say, hey, young man, I noticed so-and-so. Like the situation, Mike, where the dude in Atlanta got shot in the parking lot.
In Wendy's, yeah.
Yeah. Now, right. That dude, you knew the dude was drunk, was he right? He was drunk, okay?
Right.
Couldn't you either let him sleep that drunk off? Or say, hey, man, why don't you call somebody at your family to come get you? I'm not letting you walk home. I'm not letting you drive this car. Why don't you just go do that? And you got anybody we can call, come get you? You know, that way you can go home and leave your car mm-hmm. here. We need you, you know. I'm just saying there's another way to handle this. Why is it that the only thing I know to do is to pull my gun if you can't get any compliance? I mean, because everybody ain't got to die, you know. So that's like you said, the dude had expired plates. He's 20 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you and don't also, know how to talk to a 20-year-old.
Right. And also, I'm glad that you mentioned that. I'm glad that you said that because in every case, when I'm sure these officers here, and I thank Officer Mason and Officer Crenshaw for sharing their knowledge and their experience on the show. We still have a good 40-something minutes left, and we're going to get into another topic, another story. We're trying to cover everything. When you ran the tag, you know where the person lives. You know who the car belongs to. You know something about the person, right? You know. So why does it, like you just said, does it have to escalate to that point? Why? I mean, and then I was talking to a friend of mine who doesn't live that far away from where the gentleman was killed in the Wendy's parking lot. Granted, he got a hold of the taser, and as he was running, if you guys recall the video, as he was running, he didn't turn around and get set and aim at the officer. He just turned his arm back and just shot it, which you saw where the projectiles went past the officer, and then the officer opened fire. Now, in your experience, I don't know as far as what you've dealt with. I'm sure you've dealt with some crazy stuff and everything. But based on knowing you guys have taught yourselves how to de-escalate the situation. Are you aware of some that, other than what you're hearing now, but when you were on the force, some that got out of hand that you felt like could have been done differently? And based on that one there, that case that Simon just mentioned, do you feel like it was necessary for that officer, because of the fact now that the individual had the taser and he turned and shot, do you feel like the officer was in the right to shoot a lethal weapon compared to a taser? I mean, I don't know. That's a taser. It's not a bullet.
Now, Mike, what if, even though that prong went past the officer, what if it had
mm-hmm.
struck the officer or in the throat?
I'll follow you on that. Mm-hmm.
Okay, would he not be justified? Lethal? Him, he's already fought with him, ran from him.
Mm-hmm.
turned back, shot a taser that he took from one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it all goes back down to, like Timon said, you knew he was drunk, let him sleep in his car, or take him home. For the simple fact, you were going through too much already. You were already stressed out because of the riots that were going on. Why would you
mm-hmm.
add more food to your plate? See, the thing is, it's political because the people upstairs are saying you still need to get out and do your job, make your cases, arrest people if they need to go to jail. The first officer was going to let him sleep. The second officer came up and decided to take him to jail for being DUI. I don't
mm-hmm.
know if I would have shot my gun at him after he fired the taser at me, knowing that it
mm-hmm.
was only a taser. I don't know if I would have shot.
Right.
But I feel as if in some way he's justified, not in murder, but in defending himself.
Well, it's just like, you know, in L.A., they had the old woman who had, she was 67 years old. She's coming at the officer with a screwdriver. Now, she's got a screwdriver. She's 60-some-odd years old. He didn't just, you know, with all the martial arts that they teach, LAPD and all that, I felt they could have took her down. They didn't do that. They shot her dead. Straight blew away.
And see, Simon, that's one good point you made, the martial arts that they teach LAPD. You know, the majority
mm-hmm.
of the police really don't teach combat hand-to-hand. They're starting to now. But
well, I know they were teaching combat.
Yeah, the only thing that they taught when I went through, you had to get into a boxing ring with another officer and throw a couple of punches. So if you didn't know how to fight, if you was that person that grew up and never had a fight a day in your life, that's all the fighting that you got.
You know, if I can, Officer Crenshaw, I agree with both you and the other gentlemen. But I think with this generation of policing, we're beyond the discussion of training. We're into the application of that which you have learned. I don't care if we teach them martial arts, wusa lessons. We got these young guns out on the street right now who escalate things. They don't de-escalate anything. They escalate along. You know, we are where we are because these young guys are not put in check. The older guys like myself and Officer Crenshaw are the ones who manage to still stay there. They don't want to be around them. And Mike, to answer your previous question, you know, every officer there, and if I'm wrong, Officer Crenshaw can tell me I'm wrong or it wasn't that way at APD. Let me tell you something. It ain't no blue family. We walk in that roll call room, you know there's guys in that room, you'll back anybody in there. That's your job. But you know that there's some people that when they key up on that radio, you're like, oh, Jesus Christ, I'm going to have to go over here because you already know they've amped it up before you get there.
Yep.
And you're probably going to be calling for a supervisor and a lieutenant that's filling out these just because of the attitude. But these are the same people that in roll call when the chief or assistant chief comes down, they're heralding them on all these little minor misdemeanor BS traffic arrests.
Yep.
Never mind you're working all the burglary calls in their beat while they're sitting out at the jail for an hour booking somebody on a barking dog ticket.
You know what? I had the privilege, to spend a day at Glencoe. You know, Officer Crenshaw, I know you know, well, both of you guys know, you know where Glencoe is, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where training is for what, CIA, FBI, Homeland Security, you name it. It's a big complex for you guys who don't know. It's right there by Brunswick, Georgia. And I spent the day down there, and I actually saw where some officers in training were doing hand-to-hand combat in a room. They had all the mats and, you know, and all that stuff. And they had two guys go after this one girl, and she had to defend herself and everything. It was interesting to watch. The conflict was amazing. Excuse me?
Yeah, we call them red man drills. We did it twice a year in Waco.
But the problem is, once everybody gets it, their 40 hours in of that training, do they bring that on the street? Is the policing environment within that specific department geared towards de-escalation, even using that as a last resort, but a first step in meeting a threat? No. It's, we got to get through this, get to the next call, get results, get it done, get it done, get it done. Hurry, rush, let's go, let's go. We got to do something. Why can't you, you know, you're talking about the guy at the Wendy's. I've been in those situations on nights. People are drunk in the drive-thru at Wendy's, and they're passed out. We park one patrol car on the back of that car, one on the front while they're parked, blocking them in. Both car video cameras on so we could see them. We go up and shake the car from the passenger side after looking in it to make sure there's no guns we could see in reach. And once we wake them up and tap on the glass, we give them 30, 45 seconds to realize I'm not at home. Let me wake up and get, you know, get my wits about me. And we were able to do it. Because any of us, when you wake up, you don't know where you are or what's going on. But no, when you
Good point.
We got to do something now. We got to do something now. That's how these things spin out of control.
Right, and that's all I'm
so
saying.
So let me
go ahead, Mike.
I want to switch gears real quick, because we were speaking about the officer who shot Dante Wright, who killed him. I'm glad that they did bring charges. Okay, and there's other cases that we already know. But now let's talk about this one here, since we're down to just a little bit less than 30 minutes of the show. The shooting of the 13-year-old kid. That there, and, you know, it just saddens me because now we've gotten to the point of where we're dealing with crisis after crisis after crisis, you know, and it's just ongoing, and it's people of color that you see. Now, I mentioned the officer who was killed, but you didn't hear about that. You didn't see that on the news. Why they don't show that is another story. And it was a white guy shooting a white officer. The video is very clear. So back to what I'm saying, the 13-year-old, he allegedly took the gun from a 21-year-old. And what is this 13-year-old doing out at this time of morning? Hanging with a 21-year-old is a question a lot of folks are asking. And so he runs. And I don't know if you guys seen the video. I brought it up earlier in the conversation. But media like CNN and NBC and many of them, they pause the video and don't let you see the whole entirety of it. But he does comply. He turns and has his hands up. They freeze the video before you see the fact of that. You hear the gunshots, but they freeze the motion. What do you guys think about that? Do you feel like this officer intentionally shot this young man, this kid actually? Or was it the fact that it was just an accidental shooting, as they want to say? Because it's clear on the video. If you see it in its entirety, allegedly he had the gun, they showed where he had the gun, but he tosses the gun and then he turns and both his hands are up, but the officer still fires his weapon.
That officer was 100% mechanical. You know, his commands were, which we're taught, give loud, repetitive commands in every drill we do, whether it's get on the ground or we constantly see videos where the guy's on the ground and the officer's standing there yelling, get on the ground. You know, that officer was in mechanical mode. If he'd have turned, and here's my thing with it, if he'd have turned with his hands up and the gun, would your next word have been drop the gun or would you just shot him anyway? He turned with nothing in his hand. You should have had enough focus at that point to see there is nothing in his hand. But because he was in that automatic pilot mode, whether I'm going back to what I say is the fear element that is trained into officers to be afraid. They're actually, some of them are conditioned to be afraid. And he reacted when he shouldn't.
Now, I was on the show earlier, and that was a discussion, and I got into a debate with a person. I said, well, yeah, basically, I would look at it as a murder, which, as we all know, there's different levels. There's first degree, there's second degree, there's manslaughter and everything, okay? But in this case, I feel like voluntary manslaughter. Do you agree or disagree? It was voluntary manslaughter because, as we can see, because this is this officer's own body cam that shows what happened, and that the kid's hands both were up. And he still fires his weapon.
Well, Mike,
so what's your point of view?
From what I saw on the video,
mm-hmm.
he was turning and raising his hands up and tossing the gun. I can see how that officer would have shot him, because if
okay.
he wouldn't have tossed the gun, that upward motion of his arm looked like he's pulling the gun up to shoot at the officer.
Good point.
He didn't raise his hands. He didn't raise his hands above his head while his back was at the officer. He did it all in one motion. He turned, started raising his hands, and tossed the gun all in one motion. So the officer's mindset, like Mason said, in automatic pilot, in fear, was the guy was turning to shoot him. You have to take an additional, and it's hard to do, but you have to take an additional second and watch.
I didn't see where he tossed the gun at the same time he was raising his hand. What I saw was that his hands were up when he turned. And then later on they showed the gun sitting there. But I didn't see where the gun was still in his hand and he's tossing it.
All in one motion.
Okay. I didn't see that.
Yeah, as he was turning and raising his hands, the gun flew out. All in one motion.
Okay, so I'm here. No, but hold on, everybody. Hold on, everybody. I'm opening up a mic, if you don't mind. Hold tight. Everybody, just hold on just a second. Got a caller here, 215-805. Dr. Smith has joined us. Hello, Dr. Smith. How are you doing? And thank you for calling into the show.
Hi. Hi, Michael. Hi, everybody. Hi, Officer Crenshaw. Hi, Janet. This is my forte. And I wanted to just start out by saying suggestion and subliminal suggestion is a really, really potent thing. We've seen mm-hmm. it. We saw it during the Chauvin trial where we see it all the time when police officers and the media are trying to justify the indefensible and the unjustifiable.
Mm-hmm.
When the media immediately begins to start saying, there's a gun, he may have had a gun, the gun was in his hand, the mind starts playing all kinds of tricks because you want to try to, on the one hand, justify it, and even into our at the extent of what we try to do, we try to unjustify it for people. When that young man turned, his hands were empty. He did not drop that gun. Watch it again. Watch it as many times as you need to. His hands were empty. It also turned out, it was reported, that the gun belonged to the fella that he bumped, that the police officer bumped into, and kept going because he was determined and going after this young boy. You know, just like they tried to suggest, I think when it was another incident with a young man who I'm trying to think of the young man that they really tried to suggest something about. They were saying that he could have had. Of course, that didn't work. The young man, Wright, they tried to say he was going back into the car to get something. You know, sometimes when they try to suggest these things to the mind, you know, it's so obvious you can't you know, and they also want you to believe that she would, that this woman would even actually make that mistake, when clearly you can see at the length of time that she held the gun in her hand and it was ahead of her face and her eyes, she could see she was holding a gun. So, you know, you can either allow for that conditioning and that suggestion to enter your mind and cloud your judgment, or you can actually look at it and see it absent that suggestion. And like I said, watch that video as much as it is able to even allow. And when that boy turns around, his hands are empty. He is not flipping the gun. Where the gun was found, he would have had to literally toss the gun, first of all. And it was reported that the gun belonged to the 21-year-old dude that the guy bumped, that the cop bumped into and let go. Who's
right,
to say
right.
that the 21-year-old guy didn't drop the gun? They said it was his gun in the first place. So, and guess what? It was empty. If you
right.
look at
there
it on the ground, you officers
nothing.
Can see there was nothing in the gun. So, I mean, and of course, as part of that justification and that desire to blame the victim, you find, well, he was out. He was only 13. What is that young man doing at only 13 out in the street at 2 o'clock in the morning? Why was she out with that? Okay, that's just like saying that. Why did that woman have on that dress that was down to her, to the tip of her butt cheeks, when she got raped? You know, it was like, why wasn't he in a more appropriate area? Well, Wright was in an appropriate area before he got killed. Brianna Taylor was in an appropriate area when she was killed. The woman who was babysitting
right.
her nephew in her home was in an appropriate area, but she was killed. I mean, there's so many different things that they say to try to justify the actions of these police officers that are that are just, and I'm not even going to say bad apples. They're just corrupt and incompetent police officers.
Good point. And I like the fact that you brought up the fact that where the distance of the gun. Now, Officer Crenshaw, I have to, and I'm going to take Dr. Smith's, by the way, that's Cynthia Elise Smith, and you can check her out. She has her pages here on social media. Check her out, her books, and very interesting reads. So I want to say this, though. And for him to have his hands up, according to what the video shows, you said that it was all in one motion. He had to toss it. I don't see any movement from his right hand tossing anything, because the distance of where his body is to where the gun is being shown on the ground is at least a good 5 to 6 feet. So you had to see a motion of his right hand tossing the gun away prior to have both of his hands up, right? The officer
exactly.
would have seen.
It would have just fallen to the ground.
You would have seen the hand motion, the arm motion.
Trajectory and physics
right.
would have to kick in.
Tossing something. Right. Anytime you're throwing something, your arm has to move, right? So I never saw that in the video, but I have to take a look at it again. I'm going to keep looking at it over and over again, because you're going to see it over and over again. Unfortunately, the media, you know, they pause it now, but they need to let you see it in its entirety for us to have a good point of view of what really happened. Don't edit it. All right? That's
Mike,
what I'm saying. Officer Mason, I want to get to you, but Officer Crenshaw, I want you to go ahead and respond to that. We have about 13 minutes left on the show. Officer Mason, you there?
I just want to real quick, I'm not even going to, you know, y'all have explained it, but I got to say this personally to the doctor. Thank you so much for giving me a woosaw moment, because I am so glad to hear somebody speak up, because I'm sick and tired of black folks being always second-guessed, even when we comply, and nobody says anything, and they're complicit with whatever the system says. You know, if all these people worried about why the 13-year-old was out, why don't you worry about why they haven't found Dylan Rittenhouse, who killed people? Okay, go. How about that? You know, I mean, our kids are never kids. They're always adults. They're always wrong, yeah. No matter what they do. Philando Castile was wrong when he complied. So yeah. The way you put it, thank you so much, because I am so tired of seeing our kids and our men and our women thrown under the bus for bad actions. And no, there's not a few bad apples. You're right. The apple cart is rotten and the orchard is on its way.
It's a tree. The root, the tree and the root is, you know what I mean? Well, not the root, the root, the tree is, yeah. And they keep talking about all these so-called bad apples. No, there are a few good ones. There are a few good ones. You know what I mean? Because we have to also go back to, we have to go back to the fundamental root of policing. Now, whether
okay,
or not
hold on a minute. Hold on just a second. Hold on. I'm sorry to interrupt, but hold on just a second. Officer Crenshaw, you told me once before. I have to pose this question to both of you guys. You told me once before that you offered to help and be part of training of the new officers here in Atlanta. Officer Mason, I wonder if you ever had that opportunity in Waco. But Officer Crenshaw, can you just elaborate on that, where you gave the offer and they turned it down? Am I right?
You're right. When I retired back in 2015, I spoke with one of the ADAs for Fulton County, as well as the assistant chief we had at the time, and told him I would come back voluntarily. You don't have to pay me. To assist in training the new officers to where it was more about respect, them learning the people on the street, you know, and the people on the street learning who the officer is, so that everybody knew. Don't just send that officer that's working in the office to the community meetings. Send that officer that's working the streets to the community meetings. But I will come back and help teach and train the new officers coming out on the street how to do more of a community policing so that interaction would be better. And they declined it. They said, no, it's, you know, something that we're looking at, but, you know, it's a liability involved. And I just threw my hands up and said, okay, I'm gone.
You know, I would like to maybe have everybody consider just this one thing, the fact that this woman was a field trainer. It is very likely and possible. I mean, if we're considering all of these other things where, you know, in terms of Deontay Wright and his criminality or his warrants and all these other things that would make him to make it justifiable for whatever reason or an accident of his death. Just consider for a moment that perhaps in her field training, she saw this car. She saw this young black boy, young guy, and as part of the training is, this is what we do. Let's pull this guy over and see what we can get. Let's see if we can get an arrest. Oh, he's got a warrant. Now I can show you how to arrest. And, you know, I would not even be the least bit surprised that all of that yelling and screaming, if you can remember some of these other cases where they were yelling and screaming, get off my gun, or that type of thing, when it was clear that no one was, that the so-called perpetrator was not after the police officer's gun, but they say these things so that it will detract from what their real intent is, you know. And I believe that this was part of whoever was being trained. I believe this was part of the training, and I think it was how to have an accidental killing. What to do?
Well,
what
I'm
to
down
do
to 8 minutes
in case of an accidental killing.
I'm down to
yell,
8 minutes.
Taser! Oh, it was a mistake.
Right. I'm down to 8 minutes. I want to quickly try to get everybody as fast as possible. I want to go to Officer Mason. The same question I asked Officer Crenshaw. Did you ever offer to help and assist with the training in Waco or whatever, and was that possible or not?
network, to this day, I have the highest civil service examination score in the history of the Waco Police Department. I was the first African-American in the history of that department to ever be Rookie of the Year. I sat on the oral interview board, the final stage of being hired, for 13 years. I was a field training officer for 15 years. I personally rewrote, redeveloped, and had approved by the chief the field training program that is in place to this day. The last 2.5 years of my career after the deaths of Philando Castile and Austin Sterling, and I began to speak out about policing nationwide, not Waco PD, a sergeant spoke to a commander when they were short of field training officers. At that time, I had stopped training field training. And they were short, and he said, how about Stan? And I trained that sergeant. And the commander's response was, oh, hell no, not him. And he said, well, he trained me, not him. So when I started speaking out about the abuses, never mind that I never mentioned City of Waco or Waco Police Department, I became the bad guy. So let's see, the highest civil service examination score from the chief down, that went out the window. First minority, all that went out the window when I spoke up on issues concerning black folks. Now, they were glad to have a black tick mark and that we got a black officer column. They were glad for me to be black at the black meetings. But when I got too black for their comfort, then a detriment.
I'm down to six minutes. I'm trying to rush everybody in. While I've got you right now, and I want to go around the board real quick, while I got you right now, appreciate you, love your show. Go ahead and share with everybody your contact information and your show that airs on Saturdays.
Sure, website is easy, stanmason.com. The show is Behind the Blue Curtain. It was named by a low-income person in Waco. When we started the show, I didn't want it to be the Stan Mason Show or any of my name in it because I wanted the show to be about the people and for them to have ownership, not just in Waco, but to all the listeners. So we're on every Saturday, 11 Eastern, 10 Central. People can call in. We go in hard, and we go in with facts.
Yeah,
and we're not dedicated to black lives, blue lives, all lives, Christian, Muslim. We get straight to the issue. And our experts are not the people with credentials. They're the people living through the problems we're talking about.
Exactly. And I love your show live stream. I see your guests. In fact, you had a judge on today, which I want to talk to you about, seeing if I can get her on. Okay. I want to go to Dr. Smith, share your contact information real quick. I'm down to 5 minutes.
Oh, okay. www.calease-writer.com. That's my website. I also have a YouTube presence that you can get to from the website. I also write for Medium and the Baldwin for Medium, and you can find me on there. And I also have a group on Facebook called The Doctor Is In.
Mike, give me my personal number if you would.
Hold on just a second. I want to get around the board real quick. Time and Chip, I love when Time and chimes in. Appreciate you, my brother. Share your information, what's happening with you, and how we can get in touch with you.
Oh, Time and Chip at Wibley.com is my website. I'm on Time and Chip at Instagram, Time and Chip at Facebook, Time and Chip at Twitter. You can pick up my book, My East St. Louis, on Amazon.com, as well as my comedy CD, Universal Brother, which is on iTunes and CD Baby.
All right. I love your book. All right. So let me go back. Let's see. Janet Davis?
Can you hear me? I wanted to make sure. Okay. You can contact me through email, janet.davis49@gmail.com, or on Facebook, Janet Pollock Hawkins Davis.
Okay. Did I miss anybody? I think, let's see, Bernie dropped.
Bernie.
Officer Crenshaw.
All right. You can find me on Saturdays right here on the Michael Gay Show. I'm also going to start being on the Stan Mason Show and the Bernie Johnson Show and the Janet Show. I'm going to be on all y'all. Anyway,
okay.
I got one question before we lose our time. In order to get back to community policing, because I love what Dr. Smith pointed out, you're right, it's subliminal. when was the last time you waved at an officer and that officer actually waved and smiled back at you? That's part of community policing that doesn't happen anymore.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Hmm.
That's right.
Yep, that's true. Very true.
That's what you thought.
Hey, you guys, we're down to 2 minutes left. And first and foremost, I want to say thanks to my special guest, Officer Crenshaw, our co-host here every Saturday possible. Officer Sam Mason, you got his information. Check him out every Saturday. And he has a fantastic show, great guests, and they get real deep. I want to also thank Dr. Cynthia Lee Smith for joining us. Thank you, Dr. Smith, for joining us. We miss you. God bless.
Yes.
Janet Davis.
Thank you.
Bernie B. Man Jones, Officer Crenshaw, and everybody else. Time and Ship. Thank you, guys.
Yep.
The people in the chat room, thank you for chatting in. And we'll be back next Saturday. Well, I'm going to have to hold up on that one. I'll let you know. There's some things that are shifting, but we might have a rebroadcast, so I'm going to let you know. All right. Thank you for joining me. This is yours truly, Michael Gay, broadcasting live from the ATL here in Atlanta, Georgia.
Hey,
and
this is Cheryl Cooley of the all-female band Climax, and you're listening to the Michael Gay Show. Yeah.
Thank you, Cheryl. Hey, you guys, have a great remainder of your weekend. Good night. God bless. Thank you, guys. I love you. Peace.
Bye-bye.
Good night, everybody.
Good night. Good night. Good night.